If you'd like to make your NFL games a little more interesting, you've come to the right place. It's the Even Money Podcast with Ross Tucker and Steve Fezzik.
Yeah, Vegas, baby, Vegas. It is the Even Money Podcast Super Bowl recap episode presented by BetOnline.ag. Just use that promo code PODCAST1 if you haven't already to get a 50% welcome bonus, which is pretty cool if you haven't used it already. He is Steve Fezzik, the only, say it with me, the only two-time winner of the Super Bowl of professional football gambling, the Westgate Super Contest. Follow him only on Twitter, at Fezzik Sports. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL, Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/RossTucker. NFL, former journeyman offensive lineman, 5 teams, 7 years, loving the sports betting life, learning a lot, and I did not have a very good year. It's not a secret. I had a bad year. It's a bummer of a year, but lessons were learned, including from the Super Bowl. We will all move forward together. We can do this together. So, Steve, here's what I thought we would do. Obviously, recap all of our Super Bowl bets like we always do, and then also recap the year from a standpoint of how we did, and then start to look at some of the bets for next year that are already out there and available, as well as dive into some email questions, because we get some good email questions. And you guys, I mean, you take advantage of any of our sponsors, you're able to go ahead and get in touch with us. Pretty awesome. You take advantage of any of our sponsors, you can ask Steve any question you want over at ross@rostucker.com. So go to rostucker.com, check out the different sponsors we have, or just rate and review the show, or just buy something on Amazon through our banner ad on the homepage over at rostucker.com, and you can ask Steve anything you'd like, or me, if you want. Let's talk about it. And speaking, Steve, of talking about it, let's start with some of our bets from last week and the Super Bowl in general. I got to tell you, Steve, I was really surprised. Obviously everybody was, that the game was that low scoring. I mean, before we even get into some of the bets that we had and things that we thought, that was... I mean, I know what you say about the first half and stuff, but man, I mean, that was really something.
Agree. I wasn't surprised that the Super Bowl started slowly, as many of them often do, but just shocking that the offense just never picked up, in particular for the Rams, the entire game.
Right. I mean, wow. You want to talk about coaching and how important coaching is. That was, and it was really good defensive coaching by both sides. So some of the bets that you have, you obviously said avoid the needle in the haystack bets, final score, first player to score, MVP. Those are probably all pretty good. I guess some people might have taken Edelman as the MVP, but, you know, that probably was, I mean, it was a good bet because it came through. But even that, Steve, you know, you could argue that Stephon Gilmore or somebody else should have been the MVP.
Yeah, the problem with all those bets is not that they wouldn't be good bets, Ross. It's just that the sports books know that they can shorten the payouts on all the players and people will still bet them. So to give an example, Donald opened 75-1, but by the time that the market settled in, he was 20-1, and his true odds probably, maybe 75-1 did have a little bit of value, but his true odds maybe would be at 60-1. So many of these guys that get hyped, by the time that the game kicks off, you're getting cheated blind, literally in terms of what the payout should be versus what you're betting.
Wow, that's interesting. First player to score, Gostkowski seemed pretty reasonable for that.
Yeah, and usually, you know, the props are such that more often than not, people bet first player to score a touchdown. Now, there is a first player to score, but the problem with that is, if you break it down, a touchdown's more likely than a field goal, right? So if you have 10 scores, you're going to have 6 scores that are going to be touchdowns. You're going to have 4 field goals and 2 for each side, let's say. So that would be a 20% chance for Gostkowski and a 20% chance for Zuerlein. So when you break out the actual math, yeah, someone's got to score, and then you can always try to justify that was a good bet, but it never is.
Hmm. Oh, that's why you're here. That's why I got you as my co-host. So obviously you say don't bet MVP bets. Odds are far. Payouts are so bad for the best players. You do like typically, though, over-unders on prop bets like Tom Brady passing yards, correct?
Yes, and I did have Brady under 300 pass yards, and that's an example of one. You want to look for a prop that the public and everyone is betting over, an obvious prop, and Brady over for pass yards, and Goff, really, for that matter, were obvious proposition bets that the public was going to bet, and both of them did cash. And, of course, in a low-scoring Super Bowl, most of the unders are going to cash on the players. So there was a lot of value playing the players to go under. And, of course, the team totals under and things like first quarter under, no score early in the game and the like. And one of my favorite prop that I have bet like the past 10 years is that the second half to outscore the first half, because first halves usually are lower scoring. That cashed again. That one is now 16-4-1 the last 21 years. If there was one prop I'd encourage you to bet next year early before the line moves, it would be second half to outscore first half.
You bet no score in the first 5 minutes and 30 seconds. What were the odds for that?
That was, I had to lay minus $1.20 when I bet that. And frankly, I almost lost it. I needed a New England turnover, but back it with the theme of there being limited scoring early on. Let's face it, when New England has 3 points in 9 Super Bowls with Belichick and Brady, that has been one fine prop bet to bet year after year.
Yeah, that makes sense. First quarter under 10.5 was another one that you obviously crushed. It was 0-0 at the end of the first quarter, right?
Yes. So, and I think that's the fifth Super Bowl under Belichick and Brady that finished 0-0. Pretty amazing.
It really is. Now, third quarter to outscore the first, as well as second half to outscore the first. Is there a difference in odds between those two, or basically the same thing and same reasoning?
The odds are a little bit higher in terms of vigorous to bet the second half to outscore the first half at post, at close, because that prop has been bet, typically gets bet so heavily, but the odds are similar and the reasoning is certainly similar.
Right. And so you won on both of those. So basically you won on your first 4 prop bets, Steve. No score first 5 minutes, 30 seconds, first quarter under 10.5, third quarter outscore the first, second half to outscore the first. Then it was the Brady. Now, on our podcast, you had Brady passing yards. You took the over 286 on that.
Well, I bet that at the opener because I knew it would inflate. So that was an example of playing for the middle. And I talk about if you're going to – there's certain props on the Super Bowl where if you know a number is going to move like the second half versus the first half, like the quarterbacks, you want to get at it early to go ahead and play it over. So I did play Brady over right when it came out, but I believe by the time the podcast came out, he had already inflated upwards. I can't recall the exact bit, but we did our podcast when we did it in the second week of the Super Bowl. I know he was
Tuesday,
already up in the
it was Tuesday, 290s. Right. I think we did it Tuesday, right? Or maybe it was Thursday. I can't remember.
So certainly, as far as basic strategy, if you're going to bet the quarterbacks to go over, you want to bet it early in the betting cycle of the 2-week Super Bowl. If you're going to bet the quarterbacks to go under, you want to do it on Super Bowl Sunday, right before they kick off. You know, Brandon Cooks, I bet him under, and that was my big loser. And that was disappointing that they shut him down for much of the game, and then late in the game against more of a prevent defense, Cooks went crazy on his last couple drives.
Well, that was the only one I joined you on, and I put two units on it. It was a best bet, and that hurt. I thought the logic was sound, that Belichick wouldn't let him beat him, but, I mean, 13 targets. And the other thing, too, about that, Steve, is, you know, he could have caught either one of those, you know? I mean, he could have caught either one of those touchdown passes that were in his hand. I mean, he could end up having a really big game.
He could have been MVP. I mean, how much different is the Super Bowl if he just catches one of those two balls in the end zone? Both of those, I would say, were like 50-50 opportunities. And now all of a sudden, we're not talking about how New England dominated. We're wondering whether New England even wins the game.
Right. And part of that, you know, the one golf, I think, was just late on, and both of them were really tremendous, tremendous plays by defensive backs for New England. I mean, the first one was Jason McCourty. The second one was a combination of Stephon Gilmore and Daron Harmon. It was really, really impressive by both. Really impressive. So that was a big loser for both of us. Unfortunately, I actually leaned over 56.5 and leaned New England. So lean New England was good, clearly. Leaning over 56.5, wow. I mean, talk about off. But really, Steve, I mean, to me, you looked at the last couple of Super Bowls and how high-scoring those were, and you considered the two teams that were playing in a dome where crowd noise shouldn't be much of a factor, although I think it actually was a little bit for the Rams, but it can't have been that much. I mean, they just played the Superdome the game before, so it couldn't have been that much of a factor for them. But clearly, I'm glad I didn't tell people to actually take the over, or I'm glad I didn't actually make a play on the over. I wish I would have, though, on New England, although, like you said, that could have ended up backfiring on me, too.
Yeah, it's always dicey when you try to dissect any one individual play. And New England, frankly, did dominate the overall stats. So you can make the case that New England should have been ahead by a lot more. Heck, if Hightower picks off Goff to start the third quarter, there's a pick six, and the game's basically going to be done. I think the number one takeaway I had was, remember how Goff, how when he was playing poorly in Chicago and he could just never turn it around, he really got the deer in the headlights look in the Super Bowl. That I think it got into his head when he was unsuccessful early, and the Patriots made some mistakes, but they were just workmanlike and said, you know what, we've been here before, and it didn't faze them, and it really seemed to faze Goff.
Yeah, you know, I hear you, but I thought he actually stood in there and made some good throws in the second half, and in particular in the fourth quarter. Like, the one to Cooks in the end zone, I mean, he dropped it in there perfectly. You know, Gilmore was arm-barring his one arm down, and Harmon came over. But I actually thought, I think that's just how his face always looks. He always looks like he's got a deer in the headlights going.
Could well be. You know, I go back to, like, one of his longest pass completions in the first half, even to Woods. Woods could well have been out of bounds. He was a little inaccurate with that pass, and the play did not get challenged. It probably was too close to overrule. But Goff just seemed a little bit off, and obviously the pass rush New England was able to bring at him and sacking him four times had a lot to do with that. And I do think that the crowd noise, certainly not the New Orleans Superdome, but I think it was somewhat unexpected. Like, you go in and you think, oh, this is going to be a neutral site game, and from what I hear, that New England certainly had a huge edge in terms of crowd noise.
Yeah, it sounded like that. You also had the Rams as a play if it got to +3. What did it close at, Steve?
Yeah, closed 2 to 2.5. So the money came in late on the Rams. So that was fortunate for me because 3's never popped up. Had I gotten a 3, I most certainly would have bet it pretty big. But, you know, I can make the case that the Rams easily could have lost the game by 3 as it played out in the fourth quarter. Certainly if they had many opportunities to make the game 10-10, probably if you look at the bulk of the game and you said, what should the final score have been based upon the box score, though, I think New England probably should have won the game something like 21-12. So I think the final margin was probably pretty accurate.
So I don't know. I'm looking at our season totals, and we're definitely 20 out of 46 on our best bet. So it was a rough year on the best bets. I'm definitely -9 for the season because I only had one bet in the Super Bowl, and it was Brandon Cooks under. So I'm -9 for the season, and I apologize to all the listeners. I'm as disappointed as you are, although we know I'm up a lot over the course of the show, and even if you just look at last year when I was up like 40 units, combined in 2 years, I think I'm still up 30 units. So it all – you know, you got to look at the totality. He didn't have on his grade, Steve. He didn't have how many units you put on all those other props. Do you know how many you did, or did we just talk about those, or were those official plays? I can't remember.
You know, unfortunately, I talked about all the stuff I bet, and I never quantified them as official best bets. So although they all won, Ross, on everything I was speaking about, they're not best bets. They don't go into my record.
Yeah, I think the only one that I remember you putting units on was the Brandon Cooks, and that missed. So you finished the year up 7 units, although I'm sure a lot of our listeners took a lot of the advice you had for all those props, the first 4 or 5 that all hit. So you're up 7 units for the year with a big asterisk on that, because I'm sure a lot of people followed your bets and ended up doing pretty darn good on the Super Bowl with all those props that now, I mean, with all those props cashing in so consistently, do they just keep increasing the juice every year on them, on, you know, second half versus first half, all that kind of stuff?
Well, what actually happens is the bettors increase the juice. The odds makers, I've always stated, are largely overrated in terms of the information that they utilize. You hear all the time, all the Vegas knows more than you know, and it's true, but it's only true because of the bettors. When the numbers go up, Vegas does not know more than you do. Think about, you got college basketball, you got NBA, you got golf, you got so many different things you got to put up as a bookmaker. You don't have the bandwidth to be able to research each and every prop properly before you put it up. So what happens each year is that the bookmakers put up things like, will the second half outscore the first half? And the line on a typical NFL game is pick 'em when you put up that line. And so because of that, they put it up at pick 'em, and then the bettors get a hold of it, and they know that that second half's a really good bet, and they play it. And then this year, the second half closed -180 to outscore the first half. So the line moves, and it's not the odds maker that's moving it. It's the bettors that are moving it.
Did you hear, Steve? Of course, we're presented by betonline.ag, and I tell people all the time, use the promo code podcast1. You get a 50% welcome bonus. But there was a controversy because betonline.ag set the over-under for Gladys Knight National Anthem at 1 minute and 50 seconds. And the under was graded the winner at 149 as she said two Braves. However, betonline.ag decided to pay out both sides, Steve.
Yeah, really nice move by them, because in the fine print of the anthem, it clearly states that upon the completion of the first utterance of the word Brave, that the anthem will be graded upon that. And she finished with, she double clutched the Brave at the end and held it out, so that if you timed it, it went a full 2 minutes. But by the letter of the law, it was only 149.5, and a real nice touch that BetOnline decided to pay out the overs and the unders that were bet on the national anthem, and that is outstanding customer service.
So there's a lot of people, and by the way, betonline.ag, using that promo code podcast1, that's the key. Look, they're getting positive feedback from Steve, positive kudos from other people for, you know, paying out both sides of that. It looked like, you know, a lot of these other things, you're exactly right, Steve. You start to see the line moving a lot, and that's because somebody knows. People know.
yeah, people are in the rehearsal and it's timing out at 1:59 and at 2 minutes. And think about that. If the rehearsal is 120 seconds and you can play over 110 seconds, you're going to be hard pressed to find a better bet to make. It's just unfortunate in this case that there was the controversy associated with the rules in terms of when the anthem actually ended.
Got it. Taking a look at next year, Steve, we don't have any season win totals, but we do have Super Bowl odds out already, and I want to talk with you about them a little bit more next week because I want to get your thoughts. But these are all, you know, Patriots 6-1, Chiefs 7-1. We could look next week and see where you think that there is value. I guess, you know, in case people want to do it this week, what's your, in general, are these needle in the haystack to you and you stay away? You prefer the season win total numbers over these, correct?
Very much so. I do think they're needle in the haystacks. Every now and then you'll get value. The one time that I will bet on teams oftentimes is after like week two or three of the NFL regular season. Like I was still able to get the Rams at 6-1 after week three in the NFL regular season. And that was, I thought, really strong value. Didn't cash. You know, one thing I need to ask you about, Ross, I don't even know if this is on your radar screen with what's going on. I know there are no lines yet on it, but the Alliance of American Football starts this week. Is that a league you've even looked into yet?
Well, I'm aware of it, but I haven't really looked at the rosters as of yet to have an idea of who I think's better than others. So I'm not there yet, but who knows? That might be something we can be talking about here. There are a decent amount of good players, so maybe that's what we'll be saying for betonline.ag and the promo code podcast1. That'd be fun. I do want to get to one email, Steve, because we've got a little bit of a backlog. People can keep sending them in if they want. Ross@rostucker.com. Bri, can you hit the email sounder just because I like how it sounds?
Ever wanted to ask an NFL player a question? Well, here's your chance. It's time to ask Ross.
The email address, ross@rostucker.com. You take advantage of any of our sponsors or you just rate and review the show, which is crazy easy on Apple Podcasts. Or you go ahead and buy something at Amazon using the banner ad over at rostucker.com. There's just a lot of easy ways that you can ask us a question. This comes to us from Jeremy, Steve. Thank you for sharing your wisdom with us. We've been talking a lot about teasers this year. The standard teaser charges you 20 points juice for the 6-point tease, and both teams must cover. I've noticed that I can sometimes get a slightly better number if I parlay alternative point spreads. Is it worth it for me to play around with parlaying point spreads to get a -117 instead of a -120 on a 6-point teaser? Should I pay the extra juice to cross a key number, as in a take 8 points instead of 6, but pay something like -150. Is this good betting practice or a new way to lose money? Thank you for the help and keep up the good work. I look forward to the show every week, Jeremy.
Wow, is that a good question? It's a complicated question. Let me see if I can simplify it. So there's alternative point spreads that are offered, especially on things like the Super Bowl. So let's use the Rams, for example. So there was an alternative spread that the Rams were +8.5. So what is a +8.5 in the Rams? It's essentially the first leg of a teaser. You're getting an extra 6 points with the Rams. So if you played the Rams in a teaser, as it turns out, the way the math works out, that it's about the first leg, you're laying -280. I won't get into the great details of it, but if you tease the Rams with something else, you're really playing the Rams essentially on the first leg, +8.5, lay -280. So if you could find an alternative line where you could find the Rams +8.5 at, say, -250, that would be way better than playing the Rams in the teaser, because you're getting the same thing but at 30 cents cheaper. So that would be an example where oftentimes you can engineer a cheaper price than playing the teaser. During the regular season, a great example, never tease a six-point NFL favorite. Why? Because you can just play them on the money line minus about 245. So why tease them when you're paying essentially minus 280 when you can play them on the money line minus 245? Whenever I see someone teasing a six-point NFL favorite as a recommendation, I know that they're a novice and not a pro, because they should know that the money line is so much better there than playing them in a teaser.
Got it. Wow. I know that there are times where you tease and there are times where you, you know, you do parlays and you look and you get it a little bit more complicated, but I don't know. I mean, I just feel like I try to keep it simple, stupid. Is that bad of me?
No, that's good. It's a good basic strategy, but I will say this, that the one area where the NFL, the sports books in Vegas got destroyed, literally destroyed the most over the years, it's from wise guys betting six-point teasers against them. The odds on those, Ross, used to be risk 100 to win 100, and then it was risk 110 to win 100, and then it was risk 120 to win 100, and now some books are charging minus 130, and the reason being is that they've gone through the sports books and queried what the results were. And that's the one subset of all the betting that they've taken in where they've actually lost, not just for a week or a month or a year, but like lifetime over decades, booking these six-point teasers at minus $1.10.
Got it. That makes perfect sense. And, yeah, I mean, I know that's something that you still do. That'll do it, by the way, for the Even Money podcast. Remember to send in the emails. Twitter, Facebook, spread the word, at Ross Tucker NFL. Steve is at Fezzik Sports. Love when you download us multiple times on multiple devices when you're bored watching TV. Why not? Apple Podcasts, always huge. We'll be back next week with a special guest, and we will look at some of those futures odds. You know how Steve feels about it, but we can still go through and just see teams that jump out to us that we agree or disagree. Other than that, good luck, everybody. Hope you guys win some money.
Thanks for listening to the Even Money Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, the Fantasy Feast Podcast, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.